welcome to the Pharmacy Podcast Nation. The Pharmacy Podcast Nation is a collection of news, podcast reviews, and discussions about our complex healthcare system and how pharmacists are more important today than ever before. Find out more by visiting pharmacypodcast.com.
Well, good afternoon, listeners of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. This is Ken Sternfeld. Today, we have a very, very special guest, a young woman from California, from San Francisco Bay Area. Her name is Melissa Mamboys, and she is an actor, a singer, a dancer out in California. We're going to talk to Melissa today, and she's going to talk a little bit about her career, because she's played roles, famous roles, including Fanny Bryce in Funny Girl, Audrey in Little Shop of Horrors, and what we're going to talk about today, which is Penny Lou Pinglington in Hairspray. And I'll tell you a little story about Hairspray later on in the conversation about how that show and that movie is very special to me. But Melissa is a Bay Area native, and she's been performing since her early teens. She received her Bachelor of Arts in the Theater Arts from Santa Clara University and graduated in 3 years, summa cum laude. A few years after graduating, Melissa was diagnosed, sadly, with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma. After a hard-fought battle, she is now, thank God, cancer-free, and is even more passionate about performing. We're going to hear her story. And when Melissa is not on stage, she is an instructor at Pure Bar Walnut Creek, which is a boutique and a fitness studio she founded. She recently sold it, and it's right now in the heart of downtown Walnut Creek. I want to welcome Melissa Mamboys to the PGX for Pharmacists show. Melissa, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's absolutely my pleasure. When Todd approached us a few days ago, I guess someone in your team reached out and said, would it be something that we would want to do here at Pharmacy Podcast Nation to talk to a woman like yourself who has led a challenge and you've overcome that challenge in your career and your life to really attain tremendous success. And we want to hear about that journey because it's inspiring. It was inspiring to me when I read about it and followed your bio and followed your career and looked at the things that you've accomplished. So would you be kind enough, just as an introduction to our listeners, please tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your career path.
Sure. So I am a Bay Area native, like you said. I was born in Oakland, grew up mostly in Danville, and then stayed true to my Bay Area roots, went to Santa Clara University. And after that, you know, it's very hard in the Bay Area to make a living just as an actor. So, you know, 99.9% of us all have full-time or at least part-time jobs to support our theater habit, as we call it. Just because it's not sustainable just on what you make off theater to live in the Bay Area. So after college, I got jobs in corporate America. I did administrative assistant work. The last job I had before I left to found my fitness studio was with Anthem Blue Cross, actually. I worked in their corporate offices, assisting the corporate sales team, so assisting the reps who sold insurance to, you know, your Googles, your, you know, big companies like that as their corporate policy. And, but I did start wanting to do something as my day job that I was a little bit more passionate about. I was good at being an administrative assistant, but it wasn't really feeding my soul, as it were. And that's when I found Pure Bar and loved it and thought that there needed to be one where I was living, which at the time was Walnut Creek. So I started going through the process of applying for that franchise, and I got it. I started working on opening that business, and during that time, I also got married, and then right after I got married, I got diagnosed with stage 4A Hodgkin's lymphoma. Yes, so that is a very hard hit when you're 26 years old and literally just got married, but about 7 months later, with a lot of treatment, a lot of chemotherapy, I was cleared, and I've been in remission for about 3 years. And a few weeks after my final chemotherapy treatment, my business opened its doors. And I opened my business. I got back to performing. But it also was very clear, very quick, body isn't what it was. And it never will be what it was, if that makes sense.
It does. Let's take a step back, because you touched on a couple of things which I know our listeners are going to want to hear more about. The first is, thank you for your time and your service with Blue Cross and Blue Shield, because you see, Todd Urey, who's the founder of the Podcast Network, always wants us to do a pertinent and relevant conversations. And when I told him, and he suggested we do an interview with an actress, with an actor, excuse me, with someone who's doing what you're doing, you know, you have to be related to the insurance industry, to our healthcare industry, and you are. So thank you for your time. We're not a big fan of the insurance companies, but I'm sure you did a wonderful job there. The other thing I'd like you to touch on with a little bit more detail is tell us a little bit about that bar scenario and that bar wallet. Tell us about that franchise group. What do they do? What is it? What is that company? What did you get involved with when you opened up that franchise?
So they're boutique fitness studios that offer bar classes, a few different classes. We have a classic bar class, a cardio bar class, as well as a resistance band class. And basically, I started taking the class because a friend started teaching at a local one, and I immediately fell in love with it. I danced a lot. I tried to force myself to run. I would take a few fitness classes here and there, but I never found something that just fit my body so well and had such great results for my body, but I also liked, you know, I loved going back every day. But I was driving 30 to 40 minutes to do it. So I was thinking, wow, we need one of these in my town. And so I started doing more research on the franchise process. And after an application process and a business plan and an in-person interview, I got approved to open one. And then was, you know, set loose on the town of Walnut Creek to build my dream.
Interesting, you know, because we have so many women in pharmacy, in our profession. Several years ago, many years ago, or not too long ago, you couldn't find a woman behind the counter at a CVS or a Walgreens or the corner drugstore. Today, the women of pharmacy are dominating our profession. I think the numbers are somewhere in the neighborhood of 60%+ of the pharmacists right now are women. And I think that's wonderful. And your story about going after a dream, you had a passion. Your passion was that bar initiative. You felt good about it. You loved what you were doing. And you really took that extra step, that entrepreneurial spirit in a young woman at that stage of your life to take that commitment and to go through that, I think is extraordinary. I mean, you've had so many accomplishments, but in business, as a young businesswoman, I'm very impressed. I mean, I have an entrepreneurial spirit and I sometimes can't get out of my own way, but you got out and got a franchise set up in your hometown. And really, I commend you on that. And I know our listeners, you know, really can be taking away from this conversation the fact that you can do anything that you like. You can do anything that you set your heart to and don't let anybody tell you no. So nobody told you you couldn't do it. And even if they did, you didn't listen.
Right. Well, I mean, I think there's always a little voice in the back of your head telling you you can't do it, but you have to ignore that voice and do it anyways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So here you are, a young woman living her dream, getting married, start looking at the pathway for your life with your partner. And at that point, all of a sudden, you're hit with some news that's got to be devastating. I mean, I'll share with our listeners after you tell us a little more about my personal connection to this disease, because my father, unfortunately, had leukemia. But I'd like to hear, if you could share with the listeners, if it's not too difficult, to tell us a little bit about what you had to deal with from the time that you heard and how you were able to kind of wrap your arms around it and take the necessary steps to do what you've done, which has really been on a pathway right now to be a cancer survivor, and God bless you for that.
Mm-hmm. So I got diagnosed, and The thing that happened with me is that I had stage 4A. So I was asymptomatic is what that means. So I, you know, I have a few friends who I met who also had Hodgkin's lymphoma, and some of them had night sweats or lots of random fevers or a chronic cough that wouldn't go away, something that made them go into the doctor, basically. I didn't have that. All I had was my neck started growing. It was getting bigger and bigger, but at a very, very subtle rate, to the point where I didn't really notice it until it was sort of smacking me in the face. So by the time we caught it and I went into the doctor, I was in a very advanced stage. It had spread out of my lymph nodes to other places in my body. So really what happened is we like jumped on the treatment train really, really fast, because not only did I have a lot of cancer and it was spreading, but the tumors in my neck from the time that I found them to the time I started treatment were growing at a rapid pace, to the point where I had a 15 centimeter tumor in my neck that was pushing my jawbone to the side. So my face was tilted always. So I think that helped get over the fear of starting treatment, is because I was in, you know, so uncomfortable and in so much pain and my neck was so huge. I was like, great, let's do it. Let's do it. Can we start treatment tomorrow? Also, I think your body goes in and brain goes into a state of kind of shock, which definitely happened to me. I mean, you're trying to comprehend this massive thing, but this, I always say this super confident, positive person that I've never been took over my body. And I didn't allow myself to go to the place of I might die tomorrow, you know, very much. I went, yes, we have a 6-month treatment plan and we're going to go every 2 weeks and then we're going to get our shots and then we're going to do this and then we're going to do that. And then in 6 months I will be fine. So we got on the treatment train. I had to get a chemotherapy port put in. So I had to wait a few extra days to get surgery for that, because I got diagnosed on a holiday, so they couldn't put in a chemotherapy port that day. So I had to wait a few days, got that in, had to wait a few days for that to heal up a little bit before I could start treatment. And then I jumped into treatment. I don't know how much you want to know about the treatment, but I got 12 rounds of ABVD chemotherapy. That's Adriamycin, Bleomycin, Vinblastine, and Dacarbazine. And that was my chemo cocktail. And I got that 12 times, basically.
Wow. Who are your advocates? Who are the support people? Obviously, you were recently married, but with family, friends, and tell us about the care team, because in any successful initiative, and this is in healthcare, there's a team. The team are made up of advocates, healthcare providers. Where did you find that support that you needed? You obviously are a very strong woman. Obviously, we're very committed to get it done, as it were, and you did. And that comes from within. That's your character. But where was the support coming from during this challenge? And where did you reach out and get that support?
So I'm very lucky. My family lives very close to me. And my parents, at the time, I lived in Walnut Creek. I now live in Pleasanton. That might not mean anything to you, but if you're from the Bay Area, it does. And my parents still live in Danville, so they were about 20 minutes away from me. So I had the support of my husband, but also someone had to keep, you know, working full time. So he was doing that. And my mom and dad, but truly my mom, was incredible throughout the entire process. I don't know how I would have done it without her. I'm a very small, 5'2" on a good day woman, and getting that amount of drugs pumped into my body, I was very weak, especially the first few days after treatment. So I needed someone who could drive me to and from chemotherapy. I know some people are total badasses and can do it themselves, but I just wasn't strong enough. And then she would come over basically and babysit me until my husband came home for the first few days after chemotherapy. Also, my white blood cell counts, we found out after my first treatment, weren't recovering quickly enough for me to stay on my every 2 weeks chemotherapy schedule, which we were very committed to because I had such an advanced state of the disease. So the first 3 days after each chemotherapy treatment, I had to go into the office to get a shot that would stimulate my white blood cell counts. And I obviously couldn't drive myself and do that myself. So my mom came with me every time. I also still was trying to launch my business. When I got diagnosed, corporate at Pure Barre was lovely. And they said, hey, we know you signed contracts, but you do not have to do this. We will let you off the hook if you need to be. And of course, I was in this super confident, positive state. And I said, no, absolutely not. In 6 months, I'll be fine. I don't want to delay this by 6 months. Let's do it. And they said, okay. So in the midst of my treatment, I also had to fly to Denver to take my first round of teachers to training. And that's something that I really was looking forward to. I really wanted to do. And it really would not have been possible without my mom, because she came with, she sat in all the meetings with me. She came to training. She basically babysat me. So in case anything happened, you know, my poor employees wouldn't have to take care of me. She would take care of me. So truly, she's my hero. And
wow,
I couldn't have done it without her.
Well, you were on a mission and you had the support of a loved someone in your circle of family. Family is so important. You don't realize, you know, sometimes the parent takes care of the child. Sometimes the child takes care of the parent. My father, you know, sadly died from leukemia, you know, and I was 21 years old. And you know, as a child, you don't know. They hid it from us as children for a while. They didn't tell us. And you know, it was a long time ago. You know, it was almost 40 plus years ago. And he was working at Jacoby Hospital as a pharmacist. And all of a sudden, he would be staying at Jacoby Hospital for a couple of days, and I didn't know why. And they didn't tell me why. And it was just that, you know, dad's working hours and staying over. And again, you know, it was my mother, you know, attempting to shelter us, you know, from something that was going on. Wow. And, you know, he didn't ultimately die from leukemia. You know, he died from pneumonia because of his inability to, you know, fight off infections and things like that. But, you know, I didn't realize the impact it made on my life. Obviously, I lost my father, and I knew what that meant. But recently, I got involved with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society to be a committee member to help in the Man and Woman of the Year, you know, initiative. And we were helping sponsor a woman, Teresa Jacobellis, who came to me and she says, "Would you like to be on my committee?" And I said, "Sure, you know, Teresa, why not? I'm not a fundraiser." I had never really done that in my life. You know, the funds I always looked to raise were to help myself and my family, you know, survive. But here was something that all of a sudden it seemed to be meaningful. I don't know, maybe it was because I was 40 years graduating from St. John's University and I was remembering my dad when she came to me. But, you know, she started to feed me information that just made it more personal for me, that every 3 minutes, someone is diagnosed, you know, with a blood cancer. And it just made me think the children who were diagnosed, and you're not a children, but you're a young woman. And again, everyone thinks that diseases, the horrific diseases, are only for the old, that when you get old, you get sick. Well, you know, that happens. But when you think about the children and you think about the young adults and the things that their lives are impacted, and sadly, sometimes taken away, it just makes you feel that we have to do whatever we can to support initiatives and missions to help cure these diseases. And Hodgkin's disease is horrific. It's just they're all horrific. So I'm so glad that we had the opportunity and will continue to have the opportunities to do good things, to give back, to help people through their challenges. And your story is, to me, very, very inspiring, and I believe our listeners are as well. So thank you for sharing that with us. Let's talk about something else.
Okay.
Let's talk about hairspray. Okay.
Yes.
I got to tell you a quick little story about hairspray. Mm-hmm. I have two beautiful daughters, Amy and Emily. Emily is the little widget that's for the baby. You know, she's the one, you know, who, when the second one comes, and we love them both, again, if Amy's listening, Amy, don't take this personally. But you know, when that little baby, that second one comes and she's just, you know, right there. First of all, you don't treat them like you treat the first one. Like if the first one, God forbid, has a little nick, you know, oh my God. The second one, you know, no blood, no foul. You know, they used to say, you know, you bounce them on their head, you play with them, and you know, you kind of, you're a seasoned parent. One day you will be, you know, a wonderful mother as well. Because it says it in your name, mom, boys. You probably will have a couple of boys, God willing. But the point is that I would always take my daughters to the movies. It was like E.T. or The Lion King or whatever. And that was dad taking his daughters to the movie. Well, my daughter Emily one day, she was a little older at that point. She says, Dad, let me take you to the movie. I said, all right, what's that about? And she says, I want to take you to a movie that I saw with her friends that I think you're going to love. I said, well, I'm going to love any movie that I get to go with you. You know, I was kind of buttering her up, you know. But I said, okay, where do you want to go? She says, I want you to come and see Hairspray. And that was the first movie that I saw with my daughter where she was the one who took me. So when I read your bio and I saw that you're playing Penny Lou Pinglington, it brought back so many memories. And from the movie with John Travolta being the mother, let's talk about what you're doing with Hairspray and how that's just kind of a can't stop the beat kind of musical. And I love it. So tell me about it.
So I'm doing Hairspray at Bay Area Musicals in San Francisco. It's at the Victoria Theater, which is right up from 16th Street BART if you're in the city and want to come. But it is so fun. It's such just a feel-good musical. You're going to leave feeling good. You're going to leave dancing in the aisles and singing along. But also something about it is that it's so well-written and it's still unfortunately super timely with the heart of the show about integration, about equality. And there's a few lines in it that still, you know, even though it was written, it's set in the 60s, it was written in the 80s, and then it was made a musical in the early 2000s. Still in our current climate hit really hard. Seaweed says a line that says, why can't this just be a world where we all get our chance? And then Motormouth, when we're talking about, you know, protesting an all white American Bandstand type show to try and get them to be more integrated. She says, you know, there's going to be police there. Someone could get hurt. Someone could get shot. And unfortunately, the themes are still super relevant, which is why we need to keep doing it and reflecting the world that we live in. But also, it's sort of, at the end of the show, showing the dream world that we all want to be in. A world of equality, a world where everyone can be together and everyone does get their chance.
You know, there was so much affection at the end. You know, everybody kind of came together. You had, you know, Tracy, you know, Trumblatt, who was this outcast who wanted, she was just a lovable, you know, lovable teenager, you know, dancing on the outside, looking into the, you know, the corny Collins show and wanted to be in that music. You know, again, I was a music major. I went to the High School of Music and Art.
Yeah.
You know, it's not many people know that. I was one of those gifted children dancing in the aisle, you know, like in Fame. I was a trombone player. And I played in the All City Orchestra and the All City Band. I actually played in Disney on Parade and a Disney on Ice. And I realized, and I went 2 years at Queens College as a music major before I transferred to St. John's, you know, to save the world from bad pharmacy. That's another story. But in that part of my life, I went to musicals on Broadway all the time. You know, that was my life. Now, of course, I could afford it then. I can't afford it now. It's a fortune. But that kind of musical, if you think back about where we are today, some of those things really, as you say, are the same. But I don't even know if we could produce that musical today and not get the backlash, you know, of that some things would occur. But those messages need to be heard. And when they're done with this teen queen of contest, and then you don't really think about but you hear what they say. And I think it's a great movie. That's something that, and a great show that people really absolutely would enjoy. But there is some thought-provoking messaging in there. And I love it. Yeah. You know, and also my wife, when she goes to the hairdresser every Friday, she has kind of a bouffant look that she likes. Not quite as big as Tracy, but every
amazing.
Time she, amazing. I don't know. But that's the look. And it was like her grandmother, Zena, who every week her hair was just, there wasn't a hair out of place.
And then just perfect.
It just perfect. So the role you played, tell us a little bit about what that, what Penny was about and what she, what her role was in the musical.
Absolutely. So Tracy Turnblad is, of course, one of the main characters, and I play her best friend, who's very sheltered. Her mother is very Christian, and she's sort of grown up in a very controlled, you know, tiny world where, you know, even watching the Courtney Collins show is a sin to her mother. Even, you know, chewing gum is a sin to her mother. So she's grown up in this very sheltered world. And Tracy's her one friend at school. But through Tracy, she ends up meeting Seaweed, who is on the African American Council on the Courtney Collins show. And they end up falling in love and showing her mother that it's okay. And all of her fears and her fear-based racism is unfounded. And there's nothing to it. So I love her because she truly gets a journey where she knows nothing about this other group of people into accepting them, loving them, being in a relationship with Seaweed, and coming out on the television show and saying, you know, I'm in love with someone of a different race, and that's okay. Here we are, loud and proud. So I love that about her.
Yeah, I did too. And actually, it's the child being the teacher for the parent. And isn't it interesting that occurs? And I'm fortunate enough, both my daughters went to school to become teachers. Not that I was looking to have more teachers in my life. My mother was an English teacher and a guidance counselor at Martin Van Buren High School here in Queens. But when both daughters went into college, they went for education, and both of them got their master's in education. It's a tough a tough career to find a right job and things like that. But by that, being educators or following that pathway, they always felt the need, and I loved it, to tell me, to try and educate me like that. You have no idea what it's like to be 16. I said, no, you're right. I went from 14 to 22. I just jumped over that whole range. So they've
been... Yes, I did not experience that.
No. Well, I've been being educated by my daughters for as long as they've been around. And I love it because, you know what? At that point, I live in a house with a wife, two daughters. Right now, I have three grandchildren, two granddaughters, and only one grandson. He lives up in Boston. That's my Max fan. But outside of that, I'm surrounded by the women. And you know what? Between us girls, Melissa, you can't win an argument. You can't win an argument.
And no, true. What do you do?
Well, you don't. I go out with my friend Mitch. We go out a couple times a month. We call it the Romeo Club, retired old men eating out. And he has two daughters and grandchildren, and I have two daughters and grandchildren. We both have wives for 40-plus years. And we sit down, and we take our troubles, and we put them in the middle of the table, and we don't talk about it. All we do is talk about, you know, sports or our grandchildren or things. We can't even talk about politics anymore. You can't do that, you know. But we just talk about the good things, and we both agree that there's no point in even attempting to win an argument with anybody like that. Just, you know, just sit back, smile, and just be thankful that you have these beautiful women as part of your life. So I'm a... Yeah, you know, and again, I have no choice, but I love it. So it's all good. Do you have brothers or sisters?
I do. I have a sister. She actually bought the business from me.
Oh, nice.
So now she's my sister/boss. But yes, and she lives only a couple streets away and has a 2-year-old and a newborn. So I get to see my niece and nephew all the time, and it's amazing.
Oh, being Aunt Melissa is probably the best job that you've had, like, in forever.
Exactly.
You get all the joy, all the fun, and then when it's done, you go, here you go, sis. That's why I can take them back.
Yeah, they're the best.
Well, we have Wednesday, which is tomorrow for me. It's Leia Day. That's my youngest granddaughter. And my wife assists my younger daughter, Emily, in watching the baby when she went back to work. And one of the days, they bring her here. So if anybody wants to get in touch with me to do podcasts, Wednesday's not a good day because it's Leia Day. And I get on them. I'm on a strict schedule that aligns to Leia's naps and when she eats and when she rolls around the floor and does that. So it's all about the granddaughter and following her lead.
Yes.
What are some of your other favorite roles? Because you've been in a number of musicals. What are some of the other favorite roles? I know right now it's all about Hairspray. What's some of the other great roles that you played?
So in December of last year, I played Fanny Bryce in Funny Girl, and that probably has to be my favorite to date.
Wow. Did you sing that? All the famous songs? All the ones that, On the Boat and the new, oh my God. I love
Don't Worry, Afraid, and People, and My Man, and Greatest Star, and Cornet Man. I could keep going because it's all of them.
Well, even back to Hairspray for a minute. I mean, I love, you know, and now I hear the bells or something. What is that? What's the song? I can hear the bell. Yeah. I can hear the bell. I'm not going to sing. Don't worry about it. I'm not going to sing. I want to talk about giving back to the community and how we can do something as the Pharmacy Podcast Network to assist in raising awareness to leukemia and to Hodgkin's disease. One of the things that we are on a mission is to empower the next generation of PharmDs to care. You know, it's easy to get a job, and I say flipping burgers at retail pharmacy and just counting bills and not being able to connect with a patient. There are positions like that, not as many as there used to be, because they're opening up more, they're graduating more students than there are positions. But our vision, because we mentor, we educate the next generation from some of the universities, is to teach them to go into the community and to look to connect with patients and just show them that a pharmacist can care and raise money for worthy causes. So when you're not saving the world in San Francisco from bad musicals, because you do great, now it's a winner of 8 Tony Awards, I think, Hairspray had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are some of the things that you believe that a group of pharmacists, women of pharmacy, students of pharmacy, if you were running the show here, what would you want, what's the message you would want those next generation providers to do to help patients like yourself, people like, you're not a patient, human being like yourself who is stricken with a disease, what can we do to help?
I think something that struck me when I was going through treatment in talking to other patients in the chemotherapy room, you know, meeting other people, I was in and still am in a few online support groups, was that everyone's major concerns with their recovery are very different. So I think one thing as providers that people can do is get to, you know, ask just a few simple questions about the person and find out what their main concerns are and see how you can help them accomplish that. So like for me, I was incredibly concerned with my lung capacity collapsing because that's one of the side effects of ABVD. And as a singer, I was terrified of that. So, you know, when I was in the room with nurses or we had pharmacists at the place that I got chemotherapy, they could give me tips or tricks, things like that, to help, you know, my lung capacity still remain strong throughout treatment. So that was one of my main concerns. But I know, you know, someone else's was her equilibrium during treatment. She, you know, would fall over all the time and couldn't do that with her job because her job had a lot of standing. So I think that, to your point, we are human beings, but we all have different jobs, different passions, and we're all worried about something else. So just getting to know how what they're going through is affecting their day-to-day lives and how you can best help them achieve those goals, if that makes any sort of sense.
Well, it does actually, because it touches on the most important thing that a pharmacist can do, which is to look and talk to that patient, but more importantly, listen to the patient. We focus on consultation. We focus on identifying and making a relationship with that patient. It doesn't happen at a drive-through window. You need to take the time and make the time to find the way to help someone. And we tell our students that communication starts with listening. You know, you can learn about didactic information. You can study the book. But when the curveball comes, which is a patient standing in front of you, or God forbid, lying in front of you in a hospital bed, you need to listen. You need to be able to recognize what they are dealing with to the best of your ability, obviously, and then give them the confidence and the knowledge that you went to school for in a way that resonates. Not to talk to them or at them, but to be involved in a conversation, in a consultation that is a two-way street. You know, we find that the best way to help people is to listen to them and then do what you can do to meet those specific needs, because everyone is different. Your point is so perfect. It's almost like pharmacogenetic testing. And that's why I'm glad you're on this show, because dealing as a healthcare provider is not one size fits all. You know, right. It's not like just running through the doctor and getting an encounter. It's about understanding that every patient has a different care plan, a different need, and a good quality healthcare provider listens and learns about what that is, and then based on his or her knowledge, guides that patient down the path that the two of them feel comfortable with. Because if one is not comfortable, that care plan is not going to occur in the right way.
Absolutely.
Are there ongoing medications and things that you've been asked to take that cause side effects or things that have impacted your life? Or is the chemotherapy, thankfully, the last of your cancer treatments?
So luckily, I took to the chemotherapy incredibly well. Not to say that I didn't have side effects. I'm actually still dealing with side effects. I will still deal with side effects for the rest of my life. However, as far as killing the cancer, it worked beautifully for me. So thankfully, that was it. I didn't have to have any radiation or oral chemo or anything like that. So now I'm not currently on any medications. I do take a fair few supplements, just to help my body try and get back to some new normal. But other than that, no medications, which is great.
Well, you know, there are a number of great resources available, obviously online, but I want to kind of offer and open up the knowledge base of the Pharmacy Podcast Nation and our network to know that you have an open door to get in touch with us anytime that we can be of assistance in your medication management or nutritional management. I mean, one of the things that people don't understand sometimes about a pharmacist's role is he or she is not looking to give more medications. Mm-hmm. Pharmacists who are really focusing on the patient want that patient to take less medication. It may be the counterintuitive business model for the people we work for, but that doesn't change our desire to do what's right for the patient.
Right. So you're real people.
Yeah. So what we'd like to do is, as you save the world from bad hairspray and bouffant hairdos, the invitation for you personally and professionally is always open for you to come back on the Pharmacy Podcast Network to talk and listen. Perhaps one day you could be one of the first people who we open up the phone lines to. Because I know for me personally, with my personal family connection to the disease that you've killed and kicked, is that there are other people out there who I think would get value out of conversation and hearing and talking to someone as inspiring as you are. So I will be happy to talk to Todd about perhaps setting up time that's convenient to your schedule, where we do this again and we make it more of an interactive dialogue. Maybe people send in questions and, you know, we kind of connect the dots.
Awesome.
Because I think you can help a lot of people. I think you have today. And I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, so, I like sharing about my journey because if there's someone out there going through the same thing, I like to be proof that it's possible. And if that helps someone, great. You know, that's all you can ask.
That's a great philosophy and life for you to have, and we appreciate it. The door is always open. On behalf of everyone at the Pharmacy Podcast Network and our nation of listeners, I want to thank you for joining me on PGX for Pharmacists. You're an inspiration and a wonderful. If I was in San Francisco, I'd come see you. I'd come see you, but I can't. Great. But we encourage. I guess it's what, between July 6th and August 11th that you'll be saving the world and Can't Stop the Beat. Is that the time that you'll be there?
Yes.
Well, we will put a buy tickets on that scenario, and a special offer from Ken Sternfeld. Anyone who buys tickets, I'll buy them drinks out there at the venue. So you'll just at the Bay Area musicals. I'll pay for the liquor. Just one round. Just one round. Because I promise you, you will enjoy this show. And I have enjoyed the conversation with Melissa today. And I want to thank you for coming on the show and wish you the best of health, the best of success in everything that you do.
Awesome. Thank you, Ken.
My pleasure. This is Ken Sternfeld on the Pharmacy Podcast Network. And I will say goodbye until next time. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Pharmacy Podcast Nation. We need your help. Go to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and leave us a review. Send us a message, publisher@pharmacypodcast.com. Share the episodes on your social networks and let us know what content, discussions, and ideas, topics you'd like to hear more about. Thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.